Hello and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tenkar, and I am with none other than Matt Finch, best known for Swords and Wizardry, Frog God Games. Yes, we've finally gotten back to the Designers and Makers series of interviews, and if you're going to come back to it, coming back with Matt is probably the best way to go. Matt, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, just a little background for people. I've known Matt now for a couple of years.
Just a couple.
And he is pretty much one of my major inspirations for getting into back to the OSR, focused on Swords and Wizardry. I did the Swords and Wizardry Appreciation Day a few years ago. Please, all this stuff is because of what Matt put out there for us. But Matt, not only have you done Swords and Wizardry, and not only were you involved with Osric, but you were doing a series of videos on YouTube where you used 3D terrain as kind of a virtual tabletop with remote players.
Yep, we're running the... running the camera along the miniature's eye view of the terrain that they were going through. So, you know, when we were in a dungeon, we had dungeon tiles set up so you were seeing it from the viewpoint of the characters, basically.
Which for me was awesome because I've watched a few, I don't know what you call them, real play games online, whether it's through YouTube or listening to them as a podcast, and it never really drew me in. And then your Jordober series drew me in, and that took a lot, and that was awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I mean, it was fun to do. The high point was anytime that I could get Skeeter to freak out because of what he was seeing.
Stop stabbing me.
Nice. That is. Oh, and stop, if you folks haven't met Skeeter, watching Skeeter freak out is certainly awesome.
He's that's Skeeter Green of Skeeter Green Productions now, because he's come out with he's got his own company, came out with Crypt of the Science Wizard is the latest thing that he did. But he's way more fun when he's like, you know, oh my God, when you turn the camera around and you see something, suddenly there's, you know, a scary looking mini in the camera.
It's
20s at his best, absolutely.
Skeeter has a very expressive face and one hell of a sense of humor. And there are stories I can't tell on a recorded medium about Skeeter. But needless to say, he is entertaining.
That is an understatement.
Yes. So, Matt, with your current Kickstarter, the City of Jordoba 3D Printable Terrain by Otis and Lovecraft, you seem to be having taken that inspiration of your YouTube channel and you're bringing it to everybody.
Which actually I can't claim credit for that idea. Sculptor named Ian Lovecraft saw some of the episodes of the game and was, you know, basically noticing that I had jury rigging pieces, you know, to make them work with the thing. And he actually contacted me and said, hey, do you want to, sort of work together to, bring these, visual images into something that people could just print out and then paint to have. And I thought, that's great. So I was already 3D printing a lot of the pieces by that point using Tom Tullis's dungeon kits for the most part. That's Dragonlock. Name of the company is Fat Dragon Games. So I was using a lot of his stuff. So it made, I sort of jumped at that opportunity and we set up 3D Print Craft and sort of took it from there.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at some of the work, and I've seen, I ran Rappanathic a number of times, which was using Tom's 3D printing models for one of the levels of Rappanathic, the Mouth of Doom. And it was beautiful and awesome. But this looks like it's taking it to a different level. The detailing is amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, this particular Kickstarter we're working on, City of Jordoba, is an area that I don't think anyone has really done in the 3D printing world yet, which is a city sort of viewed from the standpoint of, you know, what a swords and sorcery kind of city, as opposed to one that's based on Tudor England. And so it's got much more influence from the Middle East, from North Africa, from Southern Spain. And then, of course, that's all, you know, twisted into unreality with Errol Otis's, you know, take on that kind of thing. He did a lot of the concept art for it. And, you know, I threw in a lot of the requirements for it in terms of the playability, because, you know, I think that a lot of these Kickstarters aren't necessarily, you know, they're done by an artist, and they don't necessarily always take into account the fact that, you know, you're going to have a figure here, or where is an interesting place that somebody, you know, might put a figure. You know, does this create opportunities for the gaming, you know, side of things? Because I mean, one of the strong points, for example, of city adventuring is the third dimension is there a lot more. You can, you know, you don't have a ceiling on it. You've got this image of the walls, you know, being sort of more climbable or more accessible. There's, you know, different floors within the buildings, and the 3D. So the miniatures that you use with that, by which I mean the models, ought to be designed in order to reinforce that sort of thing. So, for example, balconies, niches in the walls where a figure can hide. You want to give opportunities to the people who are playing to actually see, you know, here's what's on these walls. Here's what's there, right? Because it gives you ideas for miniatures that you don't get when you are simply describing something in terms of what people see. The theater of the mind only really goes so far, and the more complex the surroundings, you know, in a city, of course, is very, very complex compared to a dungeon. The more complexity that you get in there, the more useful it is, especially when you're playing with miniatures, the more useful it is to have that detail designed up there for playability. And so that was one of the things that I brought to it, was the you know, the knowledge of, you know, how this stuff, you know, gets used in play. And our sculptor, of course, you know, he knows about that, but really not to the level of familiarity I've got with tabletop gaming. So that was sort of where that you know, how that partnership came about.
Well, and you strike on something that's pretty well said and interesting. Theater of the mind does work very well with things like dungeons, because they're all set usually pretty much on a grid, and we can visualize that and we can see that. But when it comes to city adventures, a lot of times city adventures either get lost in the detail, or they get lost because of a lack of detail. They either have, you know, too much going on for the players to grab onto, or not enough for them to even know what to do. And when you're giving them terrain like this, city terrain, that is not just atmospheric, but gives them a view of what they're dealing, you're setting the atmosphere much better than I think you could do any kind of theater of the mind. Maybe if you had one of like the art books where, you know, you don't put you're showing the people, like, you know, from Tomb of Horrors, don't stick your head in the Sphere of Annihilation. You could show them pictures of what something looks like, but to actually have it in 3D in front of them, that This tempts me to actually get a 3D printer. Of course, I have no idea where Rach would find room for it for me. Maybe her yoga room.
There you go. I mean, you just plug it right down in the middle of the yoga room, and you totally won't get in any trouble at all.
No. I think that it would fit there fine. And wouldn't it be good for the mantras to have that sound in the background of the plastic spitting out? Oh, God, it would be very dangerous. But, yeah.
But, you know, I agree with you. I think that if you're going to, you know, if you're going to have a tactical combat in a city, I think that, you know, using miniatures is probably, every time we've done that without miniatures, I've drawn, you know, fairly detailed, you know, maps of what's there. And you have to mark down the number of stories tall that the building is. You have to show where the balconies are, and in two dimensions, that doesn't work as well. I mean, for a tactical combat in the city, I actually would prefer, assuming that I've got the models, I would prefer to use the models. And there are, you know, a bunch of possibilities out there. There's some Russian company that prints the stuff in pressboard, and then you sort of notch it together. Is one possibility. And then there's also, you know, Tom Tullis, again, Fat Dragon Games sells PDFs that you can print out onto cardstock,
right,
which is, you know, a little heavier than regular paper, but the printer can still handle it. And then you cut and glue that stuff, and then you've got the actual models, and then, you know, there's 3D printing, and then after 3D printing, it starts to get kind of expensive. Okay, 3D printing is pretty cheap.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, I did get Dwarvenite. I backed a couple of the Kickstarters and for Dwarven, a lot of the 3D Dwarven terrain. Forge. And yeah, the Dwarven Forge stuff.
The name is the word you're looking for, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And it's beautiful stuff. Don't get me wrong. It really is beautiful, but it's expensive. And, you know, you're like, oh, I don't really want to take it with me out of my house to go gaming with, because God forbid a piece breaks or gets lost. I've lost, you know, something that's important. Whereas if you're printing it at home with a 3D printer, you know, you can just print it out again. Or if you need more, it's a lot cheaper and easier than going all out with, you know, pre-made terrain. I know that, you know, 3D printing comes out to be pennies on the mini. I'm sure it's not much more for a lot of these terrain pieces.
Glasses.
No, it's dead cheap once you, and even the printers now are very inexpensive. You can get one of you can get a very adequate printer for less than $200 now. It's called an Ender 3. And then also resin printing, it has just become a lot more affordable. You would only use that for miniature figures, not for terrain.
Okay.
But it gets you a much higher level of snap to the detail. And I think we're going to see a lot of people doing miniatures on that as well. Certainly, I think it's better for miniatures than the 3D printing filament plastic that people use for terrain. But I think that the filament plastic is going to be what's used for terrain, and I think that those cheap resin printers are going to be what people end up using for minis. But either, you know, both of them are, you know, again, you know, dead cheap compared to, you know, even compared to bones minis.
Well, you know, and I'm looking at some of the paint jobs, and it looks like the plastic really takes paint nicely. And I was always worried that, you know, plastic, the paint would kind of slide off a little bit. Yeah, but
it takes the paint just fine. The downside detail wise on the 3D printing is actually from if you don't have your printer set up well, you can end up with these occasional horizontal lines. I mean, you can tell there are imperfections in it, so you can
something
that has imperfections, which, you know, depending on how imperfect they are, you know, maybe just fine for government work, or maybe something that makes you throw the thing around and start over again. But you know, but that's where the problem lies with the printing. It's great with paint. It's just as good as miniatures.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the detailing right now on the Kickstarter page. And for those who, again, it's if you went to Kickstarter and you look up City of Jordoba, it's going to take you right there. And some of this detailing is, even unpainted, is simply amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't freehand any detail onto any of those pieces. That's all done with the texture in the piece itself. Ian Lovecraft is an incredible sculptor with 3D stuff. He's just absolutely, one of the best out there. And in fact, in terrain, I'm not sure I wouldn't say that he's the best out there. He may very well be. Because all of that is just, it's a base coat, then a wash, and then a dry brush on a lot of that stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I still remember doing, the base coat.
You don't even need to wash it.
And of course, actually doing the highlight with a dry brush, I've looked at this, Kickstarter numerous times, and I'm like, well, I don't have a 3D printer now. I'm like, well, if I back it, then I'll have an excuse to get a 3D printer.
Yep, it's
it's Christmas next month, right? I mean, you have to negotiate a place for it. That's all. Tom will be happy. Tullis has been trying to get me to get a 3D printer now for I think a year and a half.
I'm almost tempted to say, so you shouldn't get one just so you don't give him the satisfaction, but that's
well, yeah. That is a good inside joke, too, for people who don't know Tom Dulles. Great guy. But, sometimes you just don't want to give him the satisfaction.
It's true, because then he'll, expect to be satisfied, and he'll go walking around, walking through the world satisfied, and really, can't happen. He's got to remain on that knife edge of tension that keeps all of his activities going.
So I'm looking at it now. You've got over 200 backers. You're just short of 12K. You got 7 days to go, which is very, very nice. It's not an expensive Kickstarter, really. I mean.
No, it's got a relatively low buy-in at 60 bucks. A lot of people doing 3D printing Kickstarters are a different kind of world from the role-playing game books Kickstarters. They've got some of their own characteristics. Recently, a lot of people have begun dropping the initial buy-in price on these, and
I'll go ahead and keep
they. They tend to be smaller. I mean, Tom's $180,000 one was, very, very unusual. There's one other large company out there that does that kind of numbers, and there's an enormous drop down. I think the next largest one I've seen was about $60,000. So, a third of what Fat Dragon Games did on theirs. And it's a really, there are an awful lot of people who are doing these Kickstarters. This one's not doing as well as I'd hoped. I thought we'd be at about 20,000 right now, because what's being given away in the basic set alone, not including the stretch goals, is a pretty generous package, and it's really, really well sculpted. So I'm not particularly sure why it's not doing as well as we thought it's going to. I mean, it's certainly doing well. We're going to get a lot of stretch goals out there to people. I think it's pretty likely that it's going to pick up again more than normal toward the end, because we've got one of the things about this is we've got a huge, huge number of people who are following the Kickstarter, meaning that they haven't pledged to it, but they've said that they want to get the alerts when it gets close to ending and stuff like that. So,
right.
We'll see. But at the moment, I just thought of this, but I've got a present for everyone who's listening to this.
So ooh.
Let me find where this is. Okay. Control C. Now I can't find Discord again. Where's it going to be? Here it is. Okay. And so I'm going to put this link into the message block here. I think there's only three or four people.
Fine.
We got about maybe close to a dozen.
Okay. So what I just, dropped in here is a PDF that is it's got some short tables for generating city adventure mission types, and then it talks a little bit about how to use 3D terrain in different types of city adventures, and it obviously it contains a link to the Kickstarter because it's kind of like a free sample to get people to go and buy the stuff that are the pictures in the Kickstarter. But those tables in there are completely standalone. So and they're not copies out of Tome of Adventure Design. They're tweaked a little bit for the for the fact that it's a city and to make them simpler in terms of the results than the long form results that you get in Tome. So there's that present. You saw it on Tankar's Tavern first. So there it is. I just uploaded that a couple of hours ago.
Oh, nice. Well, for those who don't know, Tome of Adventure Design, which I actually had the original, I think, 3-volume paperback, soft cover releases on that one too, is one of the most amazing resources if you're looking to kickstart your brain when you're trying to write an adventure. I've used it numerous times, so I thank you, Matt, because you've helped a lot.
And then if anyone, for those who are listening, that link.
It's stuff that you apply on your chest.
Yeah, okay, so it is up at the top there. That link, go ahead and share that to absolutely everybody, because like I said, it's kind of like free sample advertising. So, the more people who see that link to download this PDF, the better. So share it, far and wide to anyone.
Definitely. I'll include it in the show notes, and I'll put a post up later.
All right, sweet.
Good stuff. So now, to take us off of the 3D minis for a moment, I know I've teased this a lot on the blog and in different chats, but and I know there's a lot of information. It's not quite ready for prime time on it, but Frog God is, I don't want to call it a reboot, but you guys are going to be re-releasing Swords and Wizardry.
That's right. So on a box set.
I'm quieter than normal because my dad actually.
That is so freaking awesome because first off, you all remember the box set. And it's not like a basic set size box set. It's a white box size box set.
Yeah, it's the complete game. It's divided up. In fact, I just got from Mike Battalotto today his breakout of the text into the 4 books that we're going to do. And so from there, we got to check it for completeness. We will, take a look at the various errata that people have sent in and make sure that, that we're getting that stuff in there. Casey Christofferson has been working on getting art for it for a long time. Really, it's almost done once you've got it divided out into the books. It's already been written. We're not making any changes to the rules. We're going to come out with supplements afterwards that will offer a bunch of, a bunch more detail as optional for the game. But, whether you view it as a periodical or as supplements or however you view that, we'll do that. After the Kickstarter on a regular basis. But it's, really the contents of the Kickstarter itself are pretty much done. There's awesome art. We went with, the covers are going to be in color. There might be one or two full color pieces in the books themselves, but for the most part, we're using black and white art that's got a third color involved in it as well. Like you see that stuff where it's all black and white except for somebody's cape is colored in red, and then there's like red somewhere else on the thing. It's that style so that people know, people don't get the, nowadays when people see something that's in black and white, they get the immediate impression that it's only in black and white because you didn't want to pay for something that was in full color. And that's not, obviously what's going on here, because what we're looking, there is a real aesthetic and an effect to the black and white art that was in
yep.
those earlier books. It's got a certain power to it. So by integrating that third color into it, we sort of alert the mind to the fact that it's not, you know, this is a decision. You know, this is a color book. It's a color book containing black and white art. Okay, so now you know there's a reason why it's black and white art, and people can appreciate it. For the type of art that black and white art is.
Right. And still appreciate the fact that it could have been color, and we're not cheaping on it. And in all honesty, I mean, Frog God books have, you know, Bill has done the take it out to my backyard on my farm and put bullets in certain books and see how well they resist. Frog God goes always to the, I guess, to 11 if we're going to do Spinal Tap when it comes to the quality of their releases. I'm looking forward to it.
These ones are going to have staple spines.
Upgrade you need for the Challenger Charm.
Thank you, Mage, for... And we have an audience in our chat today, and he's been putting some links to some Swords of Wizardry stuff, some of them was Relight.
I'm just going to give you...
Thank you, Mage, for taking care of that.
What the fuck that
appreciate it. But, this is going to be a lot of fun with Swords of Wizardry. I've already, you know, told folks that I have plans that I'm working on now, so I'll be ready when... the Kickstarter launches to be able to have a few releases to go out to coincide with it, because I really do think that Swords and Wizardry is going to do very well with this Kickstarter.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, every time you come out with a set of rules, and this is the reason why a lot of companies do different editions of their rules, which is not what we're doing here, but it's certainly a new presentation of it. But every time you come out with a new set of rules, you get lots and lots of new activity on something. And I think it's going to create probably a lot more new players who haven't seen it before. It's, you know, just like you're doing, I think it's going to create some more third-party publishing of interesting stuff coming along with it. It's always a lot of fun when you do something like this. And I'm really excited to see a box set of it done right.
Well, you know, we have Zach now as a frog, and Zach is probably one of the few people in this industry that was able to self-publish a box set and not lose his ass on it. So,
it's got the chip.
Of course, when you mention it to him, he just whimpers and hides under tables.
As well, he should. Really, seriously. Now, for those that don't know Swords and Wizardry, whereas I look at Castles and Crusades as kind of like the bridge between third edition and the OSR, I look at Swords and Wizardry as the bridge between the different games or rule systems within the OSR, because your AC is ascending and descending, and it goes back to the original presentation of OD&D, that it you can write an adventure for Swords of Wizardry, and you can play it in Nosric or Labyrinth Lord, even Lamentations, and or Axe, and it'll fit seamlessly. You don't have to really convert, and that's the great thing about the OSR in general. But Swords of Wizardry, in my opinion, just fits that niche so well.
Yep, I agree with you. I think it's fairly well centrally placed in a lot of that stuff, which is kind of odd because it was not, you know, the middle of the timeline. It was the beginning of the timeline, but for whatever reason,
like this one,
it seems to work as something that you can use in pretty much, you know, certainly an adventure, Swords and Wizardry adventures, and you can use in pretty much any of the old school rule sets. Although, as odd as that might be, given the fact that it's really designed around the first thing that happened in the timeline.
Well, it is designed around the first thing, but with the complete rules, it pretty much plays how we played AD&D 1E after we jettisoned all the rules that made no sense to us. So it's been a good
decorations.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, and Castles and Crusades kind of does that too. But the, you know, it does it, you know, using a couple of different mechanics like the siege engine, you know, whereas, but you know, Swords and Wizardry definitely just, you know, you can use it with any one of the old sets because it covers the same territory pretty much as advanced D&D in terms of the character classes and a lot of that other stuff, because for complete we drew in, you know, all of the supplements plus a lot of the stuff that had been written in Dragon magazine, the Dragon at that point, stuff from the Strategic Review, and a lot of that also got folded into Advanced D&D, you know, without so much change. So there's all the stuff from the Dragon or from the Strategic Review. I think you basically got the same input into Swords and Wizardry that you got into Advanced D&D. So
pretty much. And you don't have a bard class that requires you to go through two prior occupations. Well, you don't have a bard class.
We don't have a bard class at all.
No. I wrote one for Nox Spell number 6, and that's probably what killed the damn magazine.
Yeah, it was, actually. A whole lot of people unpurchased issues number 1 through 5 because of your bard class.
It's quite possible. I think John Slatterosa had a bard class in that one. But yeah, I've learned since then. I think I'm a better writer now, so we'll see. I'll try it again. In time for the launch. Well, Matt, thank you so much for spending the time with me, with our audience. Folks, if you have any questions, put them up in the chat, text chat, or else we are going to consider this. Oh, Mage, what are you doing? Oh, you're putting up Nox Spell 6. Thank you, Mage.
It's 19.
This is where you can buy the issue where Eric killed the entire magazine with his bar.
And I can tell you it came out shortly before I got married because I gave away copies of that to the small group of people I got together from my bachelor party because I was so proud it was finally published. All right. How would you say Swords and Wizardry compares to basic fantasy RPG? I think you can use pretty much anything that in one system with the other. They are fairly close, although basic fantasy does stick to its 3E roots a little bit tighter. But
Basic Fantasy RPG is written by Chris Gonerman, and it actually came out it came out pretty much at exactly the same time as Osric. One of them had the, I think the final version of Osric was out before the final version of BFRPG, but I think actually he had his first draft of BFRPG out there before the first draft of Osric came out. But it's based on the basic books, the basic version of the game, and I think that he used Moldvay for his basic set, and then he drew in aspects of third edition to make it work, make it legal, so on and so forth. And so I think that the big difference there is what is covered in the two games, just because Swords and Wizardry Complete it pulls in on a lot larger set of game resources. It's the Strategic Review, it's the Dragon magazine, it's the supplements. OD&D was always larger than any of the basic sets, and so that I would say is the large difference. Although using the ascending AC option in Swords and Wizardry, like Eric said, I think you can play it seamlessly BFRPG, because when BFRPG does use an ascending AC system, it does have some
put in the dice
things that are in there from third edition, but for what Chris wanted to do, I think he did I think he hit the nail right on the head in terms of what he was trying to do, which was something that bridged the gap a little bit between the OSR and then the more modern stuff. He was looking to update and streamline.
I don't feel so.
And
good.
The support material is awesome. Anything, the adventures and settings that are available there, I think they're all free in PDF. They're pretty much at cost on Amazon. So, yeah, support Chris, man. He does some great work. As does Matt, of course. So, folks, something at home. City of Jordoba. I am going to include a link to the 3D printing Kickstarter for the City of Jordoba in the show notes. I really suggest you give it a look. If you don't have a 3D printer at your house, you may be like me. You might become very sorely tempted and risk the wrath. I'm sure I could print out like yoga bowls or some shit like that with this thing too. I'm sure there's something I can do to make it palatable.
Turn literally hit
point. Also, you can on this Kickstarter buy the printed buildings. There is one of the high tiers is for that, but the prices on that, as far as the 3D printing community is concerned, are very, very high. The people who buy Dwarven Forge will probably see it as pretty much dirt cheap for that. But
yeah, well, it's all a matter of perspective. But if you really want it and you don't have a 3D printer, now is the time. I guess I got to get Tom Tullis on this podcast at some point to talk 3D printers.
He can, well, I mean, plus that and he can abuse you nonstop through the whole thing. So,
yeah, if you ever see Tom Tullis at a convention, it's likely I'm going to be at the convention. And you'll see Tom coming along, whacking me in the back of the head, grabbing me from behind and doing unmentionables. That would be the bald-headed man known as Tom Tullis.
What's really funny, though, is when he's doing interviews and stuff like that, he's totally professional.
But he won't be professional with me. We know that.
Probably not. But that's just because it's you.
That is true. Very true.
You can 3D print yourself a neti pot.
Oh! You know, that might be an excuse. That might go over well. You see, I just got to find things that aren't necessarily directly game related that I can print with it. And then
The other thing too is that since the stuff is plastic, you've got to watch out for, you know, direct heat sources on it too. It's probably not a good thing.
Okay. All right.
So you know you can't 3D print yourself. You know,
usually want to max out our critical eye attack.
Okay. Well, point taken. And of course, folks, Swords and Wizardry gonna be a box set. Very soon, wait for it on Kickstarter. Of course, you'll hear about it from me because once it's announced, I'll scream it to the mountains. Because
yeah, you are gonna geek out big time.
Yes, listen, Mike and I are already geeking out. We're already writing spells, you know, for later books, expanding the spell list. You know, it's inspirational.
It is. I mean, it's fun stuff.
Well, again, Matt, thank you so much for joining me and everybody else here. On that note, I am going to say goodnight to everybody. Folks, I will talk with you all tomorrow. All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, everybody. Those listening.